I'm going to start this whole answer over again. It is like wild how much of a difference being out of practice that this makes. I don't know what I'm doing.
Hello and welcome to Stuck Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. My name is Marines.
I'm Nicole Sweeney.
And today we're joined by no one because we are doing our year in review. Now, I feel like, you know, we did this for 2022 where we're like, no explanation needed, but then we kind of explained anyways that we've been gone. We have not been doing this thing, this podcast here, but our year in review has become something of a tradition. So we're back. We're doing it.
Whether or not we'll do anything else, that's not for today.
Who can say? Not us. So yeah, we're here to talk to you about all of the things that we read and watched in 2023, or as many of them as we can remember. So this is my first question to you, Nicole, like just a quick vibe check on your 2023. How'd it go? How are you feeling?
Trying to remember all the things was a bit of a challenge, partially because the list just feels a little bit too short to me. But I realized while I was making the list, I got my pilot's license last year. So yeah. I wasn't like, so like a big chunk of my reading was, you know, the Federal Aviation Administration's books. And my watching was the Sporty's Online Ground School. So that pretty significantly cut into my, my media time. So I don't know. Fine. I enjoyed most of what I actually consumed. Like the worst are going to be hard because I don't know, when I just wasn't making that much time for media, I was not making time for anything that I wasn't like feeling pretty good about.
Yeah. I had a weird year as well. You know, there's a lot of discourse going around about like Gen Z versus millennials, as it there always is, but specifically about like Gen Z aging older or like looking older than they are. Uh-huh. And, you know, it keeps flip-flopping back on my feed between people being like, that's not true, shut up. And people being like, it is true, we're going through a lot. And as a millennial, you know, we can relate to going through a lot, but also mm-hmm. I feel like for the last couple of years, especially in these like year in review things, we're like, things are terrible.
In a way
that like the very early years of our podcast didn't quite have that vibe. Mm-hmm. Things were terrible in the world.
I just sort of felt like that was a pre-established. I skipped that this year. I was like, as you know, the world is terrible. Here's how my year went.
I'm glad you had your chance to celebrate because I'm going to talk about how I was unemployed for months on end. You're probably thinking, wow, Mari, that means you had a lot of time to do media, but I, in fact, did not do a lot of media. I was sitting on my couch despairing. I don't have a lot of least favorites when it comes to TV and movies because I didn't watch a lot of those, but I did read books. So, you know, there you go.
You did what you could.
I did my best. So that all said, quick vibe check aside, we are going to jump into the hottest of takes and we're going to run down the list of our favorites and least favorites for books, TV, and movies. Are you ready?
As I'm going to be.
Okay. What was your favorite and least favorite books of 2023?
My best book of 2023 was How High We Go in the Dark by Sequoia Nagamatsu. And the worst book that I read in 2023 was Serendipity by Melanie LaBrui. I don't really actually remember this book at all. It is just the only one-star read. It's the only book I gave one star to in 2023. So that's it.
My best book of 2023 was Minor Detail by Adania Shibley, translated by Elizabeth Jacquette. And my least favorite book of the year was a romance about a man who is in the KKK and a Mexican cartel princess called Darkness Embraced by Tilly Cole. I don't know if further explanation is needed. Maybe just why did you read that?
Why does that exist?
Right. Favorite and least favorite movie.
I hate that we're recording this right now on February 2nd. Historically, we have almost always recorded this podcast on December 31st, including mm-hmm. last year's episode, even though we didn't upload it in a timely fashion. We did actually record it on December 31st. So, like, the recording happened. And I'm so annoyed because that means that I now, like, have to answer this question with all of, you know, January discourse in my brain. But I don't know, man. If you had asked me on December 31st what experience at the movies I enjoyed the most, the answer was either the Marvels or Barbie. I don't want to fucking talk to you about Barbie's Oscar discourse. I actually don't care. I don't care. I'm like mad. I'm mad that I have to have all of that discourse in my brain. I had a fun time at the big toy commercial. That's all I want to say. And my worst movie of the year was Quantumania, the Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Oh,
I watched like 5 movies in the theater last year. You know, I guess we'll talk about this too, but like, I feel like the last several years I've talked about not really making time for TV or movies. And that was absolutely true again, despite every time I do this, I'm like, next year I will watch more movies. And then I never do. So of the like 5 movies that I saw in theater, I do think The Marvels was the best / my favorite. And then my least favorite was The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
I didn't watch that one, so I missed that terrible experience.
Wait, you haven't watched this movie?
No. Why? Why would I do that?
I honestly was like, oh, I'm surprised it wasn't The Ballad and that you went with Quantumania. But I didn't know it's because you just refused to watch it.
I just refused to watch it. Although, to be clear, I really did not like Quantumania. So I don't know. I think I might still have stood firm in that answer. But regardless, I just refused to watch the other movie that I knew I would hate. Quantumania, I like went into expecting to enjoy myself, and then I did not. Ballad, I know I wouldn't have enjoyed myself, so.
I think I want to make you watch that.
No, get out of here. No, you can do no such thing. Absolutely not.
Favorite and least favorite TV show.
My favorite TV show that I watched in 2023 was Severance. It's the best thing that I watched in 2023 and also my favorite. And my least favorite thing that I watched on TV in 2023, I'm going to give it to the one episode of Andor that we watched. I'm going to call that my least favorite thing. I don't know. No disrespect to that show. We watched one episode and I was not compelled to continue watching. I think I might have liked it, but if I had, but I don't care about Star Wars. And so that's my least favorite show of 2023.
Yeah, similarly, I just don't have a lot to choose from. So take these answers with a grain of salt. My favorite, and I think the best, was also Severance. Least favorite, I also watched that one episode of Andor and we immediately quit. But, I had a ton of fun watching The Gilded Age. But also, if I was like looking at this and like really naming what I thought was the worst of all of things that I watched, probably The Gilded Age.
You're putting Gilded Age over Wheel of Time.
You know what? Also, though, like maybe at Wheel of Time season 2 is like below Gilded Age. You're right. Okay. You're right. Yeah. You're right. But like maybe the like, I don't know, some of both of their parts kind of balances it out. But season 2 alone, yeah, that one was worse.
Shocking. A shocking, truly a hot take, as promised, leading with a hot take. It's a take that is hot to me personally. It actually probably won't be a hot take to anybody listening, but it's a hot take for me, who sat next to you while we watched these shows, to hear you say to me that you would put Wheel of Time over Gilded Age, because Gilded Age, you willingly were like, yeah, more Wheel of Time. I was the primary driver on us watching more Wheel of Time. So I feel like this is, your memory has been corrupted a little bit here.
No, but season 1, I was like into fine. And there were like more things during season 1 that I liked. Season 2, I was big mad. And I would put season 2 like below Gilded Age. So I think that probably, like I said, like both of those experiences are maybe balancing each other out.
Okay.
And I will say, like, Wheel of Time had, maybe they're kind of neck and neck for just like the sheer like beauty of looking at it. But at Wheel of Time, there was a little bit more like reaction and investment. Gilded Age, was I watching it or was it watching me? Who can say? Now that we've gotten the hot takes out of the way, we're going to go back and talk a little bit more in detail about all of these things. So we'll head back and start right back with books. How was your reading year overall and any other things that you want to highlight?
I think I had a pretty good reading year. Like, I genuinely enjoyed most of the things that I read. Like I said, only had the one-star book, so it was an easy selection for my least favorite read of the year. Much harder was the suggestion of my favorite book of the year. There were several books that I almost chose as my favorite book of the year, but How High We Go in the Dark, I think, just stuck with me more than anything else that I read. How High We Go in the Dark is, it's kind of like a bunch of short stories that are interconnected. It takes place in a future global pandemic, and all of these different characters are sort of interconnected. But there were so many big, interesting ideas about, I don't know, humanity and the, like, the struggle to rebuild and how people acted, you know, during and after and whatnot. It is the book that sat in my feelings the longest. I think I read it like early, mid-year and could not stop thinking about it. My two main honorable mentions are The Beautiful Ones by Silvia Moreno Garcia, which was the first book that I read in 2023. And I was like, damn, that's it. I nailed it. book one. I don't need to read anymore. I have my favorite book of the year. Incredible. I loved it. That one, I think, will be a comfort read in years to come. It'll get added to the rotation of like go-to comfort reads. On the flip side, Crying in H Mart by Michelle Zauner, also one of my favorite books that I read this year, will not be among my comfort reads due to how I sobbed the entire, just Crying in H Mart is a memoir mostly about her mother, just memories of her deceased mother and just her journey losing her mother and what that means for her sense of identity and, you know, lots of big parent grief feelings, but very, very good.
I think it's so interesting that your like favorite book of the year was about like some future global pandemic and mine was about Palestine. So very timely books. Minor Detail by Adania Shibley is a work in translation about, it's like set up in two pieces. It's a very short novella. And the first half of the book is told through the perspective of an IDF soldier. I think it's like 50 or 60 years ago, as he captures a young Bedouin woman. It was the sole survivor of a group of people that they basically murdered. And they take her, they capture her, and they gang rape her. So it's very, very difficult to read about. But you're reading from this the perspective of the soldier, and he is very removed from what he is doing. It is almost this like super robotic sort of way to approach the story. We get caught up in the motions that he's going through and the way that he's like sort of distanced from the own like the horror of the atrocities that he's committing. And at the same time, there are all of these motifs that like sort of spring up about him and his corruption. He is like at war with nature around him. And so you get the real sense of like the commentary that she's making about like what it takes to do these or to commit these atrocities. And then the second half of the book, we're following a Palestinian woman in an occupied Palestine, and she comes across a larger like story that mentions this murder as sort of a minor detail, and she becomes obsessed with trying to figure out more about what happened to this young woman. But just even trying to find out more information is very challenging for her, moving and living in an occupied Palestine. Her point of view is almost like so funny in in the way that she approaches it. So it is disarming, even as you start to see the way that like those motifs and those like themes from the first half of the book carry over into the second half. And even though like the back of the book tells you that the minor detail that's sort of connecting these two timelines is one thing, you start to understand that there are so many things that connect this woman to, you know, basically all of the Palestinians and all of the Palestinian women who have suffered greatly. I am telling you that I read the last page, and this was one of those like experiences where after I finished reading, I stared at a wall for like an hour, and I just like, I couldn't like, I don't know. It was just so emotionally affecting, but the book itself is so well written. It is like masterful the way that Shibley put this all together. And so I also had like a top three that I was kind of going back and forth in terms of what would be at the top. But when I thought about like the way that this affected me, how good it was as a book, and just like the experience of reading it mm-hmm. in 2023, like in the context, it came out on top. But my two honorable mentions are How Not to Drown in a Glass of Water by Angie Cruz and How the Word is Passed by Clint Smith.
We last time also included a little bit of a like nonfiction section, and I guess technically we both just included nonfiction books in our honorable mentions, but yeah. Always read a bunch of it because it's like my one consistent bit of reading homework is nonfiction book club. And aside from Crying in H Mart, which I just read on my own, my other number one was How Far the Light Reaches by Sabrina Imbler, which I think you recommended to us. I think that's why we picked it up. And it is incredible. How Far the Light Reaches, A Life in 10 Sea Creatures is the full title of the book. And it's a collection of essays that are about specific sea creatures, but they also tie back to things that are in some cases like personal to Sabrina Imbler or cultural in some way. There's a really interesting just mix of themes woven into this book that is on the one hand a marine biology book, but on the other it's got like memoir vibes and other things kind of woven in. It's very, very cool. I liked it a lot, thought about it a lot. And in thinking about my nonfiction books, I realized that I did actually have another one-star read of the year, and that was Bittersweet by Susan Cain. So that was my worst nonfiction book of the year. Bittersweet, How Sorrow and Longing Make Us Whole, upset me so much. It's theoretically about like the value of sorrow to a society, but it winds up being, I don't know, not that. It's just a collection of vibes. It's a collection of vibes and not in a good way. It was just really, really frustrating and disappointing. And I think that it maybe would have been a 2-star read if I had had lower expectations, but I had such high expectations that it did not meet. And it was a 1-star read.
I did not read a ton of nonfiction last year. I obviously mentioned How the Word is Passed by Clint Smith, which I loved. How Far the Light Reaches, I also read last year and I loved. But I also finally I don't know, jumping on the bandwagon is a weird way to phrase this, but a lot of people had this as their favorites on their favorites list in 2022. But I finally read I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy. Mm. I had avoided it because I don't have any like ties to Jeanette McCurdy, and I'm not like a big memoir person. And I feel like a lot of times with like celebrity things, you have to have a tie to the celebrity to care. And I did not. But I finally read it and I'm very glad that I did, because I think that it is obviously like just emotionally devastating, but also really, really interesting in the way that McCurdy approached telling her own story, and specifically in the language that she uses, and almost in the simplicity and the like youth and naivety that she captures in the simplicity of the way that she tells her story. Mm-hmm. And I think there's also a way that she just like presents the story and says, this happened, and doesn't draw any conclusions. And you're sitting there going like, that was fucked up. she doesn't say that. So it was like I think that made it like such an effective like story, or she was telling such an effective story, because I was sitting there like freaking out about the things that she was going through because she was just presenting it to us. And I listened to the audiobook, which is read by McCurdy, and she did an excellent job reading it. And there was, in fact, a couple of times that I was crying in the club listening to her tell me this story. So before we move away from favorites, there is one more series that I have to talk about because I feel like it took up so much of my brain space, even though I ended up giving this book a 4 stars and every book in the series a 4 stars. But also I think about my reading year and this one stands out so, so much. And it is the Locked Tomb series by Tamsin Muir. So Gideon the Ninth, Hera the Ninth, and Nona the Ninth. This book is really difficult to describe because so much is going on. And the starting point, like where you start the story, it changes so much from there. But essentially, we're following Gideon, who is an indentured servant of sorts, and she's trying to escape the Ninth House where she is indentured. And she almost makes it before the reverend daughter of this place like captures her again and brings her back, and it says basically like, I will free you if you do one more thing for me. And so all of the like children of the houses are being called basically to compete in this, in these sort of like weird games that if they best all of these challenges, they will obtain immortality. And so in order for Hera to compete in these games, she needs a cavalier, she needs a swordswoman. And so she tells Gideon, if you go with me, if you do this one more thing, I will set you free. And like I said, that's like really just a tippy starting point of like all of the crap that happens over the next 3 books. It is super, super confusing. They are so, so weird. They're confusing in that they're layered, and like a lot of what Tamsin Muir is doing is kind of intentionally leading us astray. I feel like a lot of it is told through an unreliable narrator, and so oftentimes we're not quite sure what it is we're experiencing until like one piece of it clicks in place, and then you're like, aha. So it is like confusing at first, in a way that leads you to a lot of satisfaction in terms of the storytelling. And it's just so unlike anything that I have ever read that it immediately wormed itself into my brain. This is the kind of thing that could easily become your entire personality. Like I read this and I was like, oh no, I'm in danger. As evidenced by the fact that I immediately was like, Nicole, you have to read this. Nicole, you have to read this. I've been trying to push her. So me mentioning it is also getting you guys on board to push Nicole to read these.
Wow. That is a push that I'm willing to accept. It's a little bit different than all the times, see earlier in this episode, all the times where you are like, this thing was terrible. I need to make you have this experience that's bad. Like what? You are not my friend.
I am your friend, and we are so cute, and we're so cute when we talk about bad things.
No.
You gotta watch that thing.
No, don't. I don't want to. I'm so tired now. I'm so tired.
Listen, and I know we're like, who can say what will happen to this podcast after a year in review?
Sure.
But if we ever like, you know, ideas for things to do on the podcast, The Locked Tomb is a series that would just be so good. It lends itself so well to just picking apart the pieces because it is kind of leading you on this mystery, and it's very much engaging its audience and trying to figure out what's going on. So IDK, it could be like an episode or something. I'm just saying.
Fair.
I also realized that I like jumped right into talking about my favorites and I did not talk about my like general year in reading. I started like last year, I talked about reading, I think it was like 244 books and how abnormal that was for me. So in 2023, I actually had a pretty normal reading year. I read 125 books.
If we're again playing the comparison game, I read 61 books. So you doubled my reading year as opposed to last year where you did 4 times my reading
year. Yes. Exactly. I'm like back to normal. It wasn't like a stellar reading year. My average star rating was 3.2, and usually I'm between like 3.5 and 3.8. So it's a little lower. I read a ton of stuff that was just middling, not a ton of stuff that I felt very strongly about, especially in like the positive sort of end of the spectrum. So that said, any other lowlights that you want to talk about?
I mentioned that I had a hard time finding, you know, like what a least favorite book. I only had the 2 1-star reads. I did have quite a few 2-star reads. At least one of those was self-inflicted. I decided, for reasons unbeknownst to me, that I wanted to reread The Gilded Wolves and then read that whole series. It was a 2-star the first time that I read it. I don't know why I was like, this time it will be different. And then not only was it not different, I was like, I'm going to finish this series. And it was a solidly 2-star experience. I don't know. I can't make that make sense other than it was the end of the year. I read a ton in December in order to like get to my little goal. And so I knew that they would be really fast reads. That's actually, I think, probably some part of why I made that decision. Now I know. I can confidently say that I read the whole series. I know how I feel about it. It is what it is. Yeah, so I don't know. I had quite a few 2-star reads, among them Legends and Lattes, which I know you had a lot of feelings about.
Yeah. I gave it 1.5 stars. I think at some point that was a 2-star, and that probably that bump, half a star bump down, is because people love it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, sure, fair.
But, you know, okay, it's not that people love it so much, it's that people love it, like, to me, and whenever I talk about it, I get so much defense, and it's just, like, the kind of defense that it's, like, so flimsy. It's not like, I liked it because X, it's just like, oh, but vibes. And it frustrates me so much that I feel like this book has soured more and more in my feelings because the vibes were bad. I did not enjoy this.
I have another sort of, I don't know, low light. It's weird to call it a low light because it's actually a 3-star read. At the very beginning of the year, I read 3 Jane Igaro books. So Ties the Tether, I read first, and then The Sweetest Remedy, and then Where We End and Begin, which I think is publication order. And I gave them 3, 5, and 4 stars. I really, really loved The Sweetest Remedy. Ties the Tether, I could tell that I enjoyed her writing. There was a lot that I really enjoyed in this book. My sense of justice around the way that people treated this main character, like, I could not stop thinking about it. Even as I was reading other books, like, I was moving on, I had left it, and I was still so upset for her. So the thing about this book is the main character's father died, and there's just a lot of sort of, you know, like, family dynamics playing out there. And the way in which the character's mother weaponizes her father's memory against her, it made my blood boil. This is not in any way the major, it's not like what the story is about, but it like comes up periodically throughout the book. And I couldn't let it go. I'm like still upset about it now. A year later, was a 3-star read for 2 reasons. 1, that my sense of justice could not abide that. And then 2, there's just like a level of resolution that happens way too quickly. And after reading all 3 of these books, I realized that there's like a separate thing going on here. There's a level of forgiveness, a level of just like forgive and forget and move on that is happening in all of these stories that just could not be me. I had to like sit with some personal thoughts and feelings after this and go, huh, like maybe there's some stuff that I need to work on in terms of my willingness to move on from things, because I felt in all 3 of these books that the main character moved on from things much faster than I would have. But, you know,
petty queens say absolutely not.
I was like, I don't like it.
And that's really funny, like in romance where the whole thing is supposed to be like romanticized. But I don't find that like, that's not something that I daydream about. It's like moving on very quickly. No. Like, no. Yes. That's not fun. That's not fun for me.
No. There were not enough ardent I'm sorry's. I want a real fucking apology as part of the resolution here. And people gave like a half-hearted shrug and she was like, okay, I forgive you. No. No, groveling.
This is really funny because I had a really, really similar experience with a book, a romance book called Dating Dr. Dill by Nisha Sharma. And this is super disappointing. Nisha follows me on TikTok.
Oh, no.
Extra awkward. I wanted to like this, but it was a similar thing where you could tell that very purposefully, like she was highlighting strained relationships, especially in like immigrant and first generation families. Mm-hmm. But it frustrated me so much, the way that everybody treated each other in that book, that it became like actively unenjoyable. Like, mm-hmm. I see what you are doing, but this is not fun to read. And then that is sort of like compounded with the fact that there's a creator out there who talks about like the ways that romance books can be categorized. And mm-hmm. some of the categories are like call HR. It's a call HR book. Or like sometimes it's a he just needs to go to therapy book. Uh-huh. And Dating Dr. Dill was just a he just needs to go to therapy book. And like, so that main female character did not deserve anything that was happening to her, including the love interest. Like, he names his dick. Seriously. And throughout the whole thing, he just refers to his own dick by a name. And I just couldn't do anything but give it a 2-star and hope that Nisha never sees my review on TikTok. The other worst things that I read this year, I mean, there were a lot, right? Bottom like 10 or so that I have or whatnot. But a lot of times these like worst of the years for me are also connected to content creation, because I did pretty consistently still post on TikTok last year and to a lesser extent on YouTube. So a lot of my bottom stuff is just like things I read because of discourse.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So the Triple K Romance is from Tilly Cole, who's a pretty popular author on TikTok for her romance, 1,000 Boy Kisses, I think it's called. And so I think somebody probably was just reading through her backlist and found this book that she published in 2019 and just brought it to social media and was like, does anybody else, did like anybody else see that Tilly Cole is publishing KKK romance? And so it started a whole discourse about how you shouldn't do KKK romance.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Yep. But that was controversial amongst the white community, mm-hmm. I suppose. Mm-hmm. And so it just started this whole conversation, particularly about like dark romance and like how dark romance sometimes is used as an excuse to get away with literally anything. And a lot of it was people talking about like dark romance in general, but they had not read the book. And so a lot of fans were coming out of the woodwork to be like, but you haven't read the book and you're misrepresenting it. And I don't know if you heard what I heard, but I heard a challenge in the yep.
I mean, to be clear, I didn't actually, except I've been speaking the language of you for enough years now that I hear it. I hear what you heard.
Okay. I heard a challenge. I actually read this during a car ride. We were on a road trip together. You were driving and I was in the passenger seat, like fuming while reading this. I was trapped. I had nowhere to go. We were on a road trip.
So you were somewhere in the cornfields of Iowa.
Yes. And it was terrible. Not only because I have so many questions, if you look at a hate group and see that as a sandbox to create your romance. But
bad.
Just from like, yeah, a writing perspective, this was terrible. From the way that it represented the Mexican community. I mean, if you're telling me your female main character is a Mexican cartel princess, like I have questions. Mm-hmm. So it was bad all around. The other one, very quickly, was Pucking Around. This came out of the hockey debacle that happened last year in the book community, because a very prominent book talker, Kira Lewis, was sexually harassing hockey players. So we had to have a whole conversation about sexually harassing people, mm-hmm. and how that's bad, actually, which again, some people did not think so.
Wow. What a choice. What a hill to die on.
Yeah. And that's where so many more people than you would imagine in the book-ish community are dead on that hill. So the beginning of all of this, of like Kira Lewis's obsession with hockey, came because she read Pucking Around. And Emily Rath actually like jumped into the conversation a few times. So I was like, who is this woman? What is this book? And I read it and I regret every single moment that I spent with this book. It was truly, truly awful. It's a 750-page contemporary romance, which is like the least of its crimes, if you can imagine. Also, people were big mad at me because I crowdfunded this one. I said that if I got $200 on coffee, I would read it and review it. And oh my God, people got so mad, like so mad, like in my DMs, like, I'm so disappointed in you, sort of mad because I did that. So, I mean, it didn't stop me.
yeah, I also hear the challenge that they issued to you in telling you how disappointed they were. Also, I'm translating for the audience. If you didn't hear it too, that was also a challenge.
The English to Muddy Dictionary, Nicole.
I love the ways in which recapping our year in media is now also recapping your year in discourse. Like, that's it's now a critical part of your year in media.
I love that also this highlights the difference between you and I. This has been a thing that we've, like, revisited across the history of this podcast. It's like, obviously, you and I are very similar, and we think very similarly, and we share a lot of the same opinions, but there are, like, key ways that we are different in our approach to media. And so, like, you right off the bat being like, why would I watch Songbirds and Snakes? And me sitting here for like 30 minutes now and talking about all of the things that I read because I received them as a challenge. I don't know. It feels like a key difference.
Yeah, it does. It does.
So I think that fairly wraps up books. So let's go ahead and move into movies. How was your movie watching year, and anything else you want to highlight for us?
You know, my movie watching year is harder because I don't really track it anywhere. I decided that this is going to be the year that I do Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. Although when I went and looked at Letterboxd, I see that I've started in January's before and never once made it out of January on Letterboxd. We'll see if this is the year that I update Letterboxd past January. I made a list of the movies that I could think of that I watched this year. It was basically just me looking up movies that came out in 2023, which means I'm probably missing a ton of things. In looking at my list, I did quite a bit of airplane movie watching. That was a favorite place for me to watch movies this year. I guess I do kind of feel like we should talk a little bit about Marvels, if only because we're no longer doing our MCU. This is it. This is it. This is our one moment to talk about it. After we did so much, the project was so long, so extensive. But I don't know. I really, really enjoyed it. It's interesting that those MCU movies were both my high and my low for 2023. Obviously, the MCU movies always make an appearance in these lists on the podcast because it's been a big podcast project for us for so long.
I also think it's interesting with the MCU because I continue to watch, but we're not doing the project. So I feel like I'm also like a little bit more removed from like reaction and discourse to a certain degree. Mm. And it's interesting because we started the project and we were just kind of like going along with it. But I think through rewatches, you and I both started to appreciate and enjoy the MCU more. Yes. And it's funny to me because now on this end, especially over the last few MCU releases, I feel like there's so much more backlash to the MCU. And I don't know if that is true or if that is just my experience of thing. I do know that it coincides with the MCU finally being or feeling more diverse. Mm-hmm. It's getting a lot more like female-led movies and a lot more racial diversity in these movies. And I also can realize, however, that it might just be backlash against Disney and like big evil mouse overlord, and like the MCU movies deserve criticism and Disney deserves criticism, but I don't think that you can quite separate that out from the fact that we're getting so much more of this criticism now as they are finally getting more diverse. And so I feel like a lot of what I watched last year, even though it was just a handful of things, were things that got like the bad discourse online and that, you know, like the things that you approach and you're like, well, I'm going to like this on principle. And that's kind of how I approached the Marvels, because I thought that I would not. I mean, I heard so much bad about it online and I had a genuinely good time watching that movie.
It was fun.
I thought it was so delightful. It was so fun. It knew what it was. It did well by its characters. Like, it had great set pieces. It was really visually interesting. It's like everything you could ask for from an MCU movie. Like, was it the best movie I have ever seen in my life? No, but it was good. It was fun.
It was fun. The jokes were good. Yes. Kamala Khan and her family, like, they're all of their stuff charming. So lovely and charming and good. And that, like, costumes, all the big set pieces, the one alien world where they sing, wonderful, incredible, loved
amazing.
That. Yeah, it was a really fun time. And it is one of those things where, like, it's hard to disentangle the places that the criticism is coming from. And this isn't saying that you can't, that all of the criticism is unfair or that people can't criticize. That is true. But also, like, you're getting this big backlash for the movies that are more diverse, and not just more diverse, like, you know, this also is the first MCU movie directed by a Black woman. Like, you know, there are layers to this.
One of the other things that I saw was The Little Mermaid last year,
which
was similar, I feel like, to all of the discourse that was coming out around that. And again, I had a good time in the theater. I mean, that whole project of, like, the live action Disney movies, I have feelings about, especially about, like, why exactly they're necessary and, like, what they're bringing as, like, new, adaptations, like, why they're happening. But of all of the, like, some of them are quite terrible, to be honest. So, like, this one was not, and yet it was catching so much backlash. And you, again, same thing. You can't disentangle that from the backlash that existed just because, you know, they made Ariel Black. So it was like one of those kind of things. But honestly, I went with my sisters. We had a great time in the movies. And, you know, I would rewatch that. I would put that on in the background. I would have another great time watching it. I don't think that it quite deserved all of the vitriol that it received.
Agreed. I am also on record complaining about that project here on this podcast for sure. Because they began the project of making these quote unquote live action remakes with The Lion King. Those are fucking lions. What do you mean live action? What do you, words mean things. Why are we doing this?
Live anyway. Action CGI.
Another like highlight film from 2023 for me was May December. Natalie Portman plays an actress who is going to meet a woman played by Julianne Moore, who is a infamous person because she dated a child. She like famously dated a child, went to prison, got out, and married that child, has kids with that child, who is now a grown man. This movie has gotten some backlash because they did not consult the, like, you know, real life victim that it is loosely inspired by. I think that that's a fair reason to not want to watch this. The entire project of this movie being about, like, the fundamentally exploitative nature of Hollywood's approach to these things. This movie is about, like, making movies about like this. Like, I don't know, it's very, very fundamentally meta in its project. And I think that it's very effective at that. But it is not without its problems. But I thought it was a very good and very well done movie. The performances were incredible. Charles Melton especially. Not that I want to get into Oscar discourse, but I he was incredible. That's all I'll say about that.
Do you want to say anything else about Barbie?
No. I don't want to fucking talk about it. Like, I got to a point where there was no correct opinion. Like, any, like, if you had a take, you were wrong. All the takes had been taken. They were done. You have, there's nobody has anything else to add. The takes have been taken. Let it go.
I'm not going to make you listen to me talk about Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. very quickly. I hated the book. We went into the movie. You know, I was not hopeful. I kind of knew that I would hate it anyways because fundamentally I did not like the story. But I was curious about how they would treat being in Snow's perspective. Mm-hmm. And the answer is, like, not well. I don't think that they handled the story very well. And in fact, like, a lot of the problems that I had with the book, I think are kind of made worse by having a very charming and good-looking man in the titular character, playing the titular character. And, like, I think I was getting, like, angrier and angrier even leading up to going to see the movie, just being, like, on Snow is Hot TikTok against my will. But apart from all of that, I don't think that the movie was very successful. I think you needed a lot of background knowledge to go in and, like, really understand the, like, what actual story they were telling. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have said any of this because I still really want you to watch it. I'm not making my case. But yeah, that was it for me and movies. So we can move on to TV shows.
Light, thin movie section.
Yes, very thin movie section. Mine was also a thin TV watching year. I'm pretty sure everything that I watched on TV this year, with the exception of like maybe Great British Baking Show and The Bachelor, I watched with you. So whatever you watched, I watched.
Yeah, this was a banner year for us hanging out on each other's couches. We got a really impressive couch run this year. So
yes,
that's it. That's all your TV watching.
So much. Yeah. We saw each other a ton. And this is, it's actually really funny because I mean that very literally, to the point where we started shows together that after I left, you finished and I just simply did not. They stopped existing for me when I left your couch.
Yeah, I made a list of all the things that we watched, and I finished almost everything on this list, and you finished nothing on this list. So,
yes.
really incredible. Severance is, of course, one that we both watched and finished together simultaneously. That was part of a game that we played for. We were going to do content about this, and then we never did. But we had a jar, and we filled this jar with the names of different shows. Like, we each wrote down, I don't know, like five different things and put it in the jar. And then we would draw something and we would have to watch one episode, just only committing to one episode at a time. So that's how we watched one episode of Andor. We originally only watched one episode of Wheel of Time, but we like came back around to it, you know, in subsequent visits. But anyway, Severance was one of the few things that we watched and kept going. Like, we were like, okay, yes, let's, we will continue, continue to watch the show because it was that good. It was really incredible, and it's getting another season, and I'm so fucking excited. I can't wait.
It's one of those ones, like, I don't know, there's so much like mystery and there's so many layers to what's going on. So I'm like genuinely excited. I mean, I am more likely to watch it on your couch, but even if not, I feel like that one has a good shot of being watched.
It's got potential. It's got potential.
It's got potential.
Well, the other thing that we watched all the way through from the jar was The Traitors, which you then got so into, a reality television show, which you then got so into that you went home and sought out the UK version. So I just need to note that for the audience.
Nicole really is trying to relinquish her crown as the reality TV show watcher.
I'm just noting the facts, okay? That's all. I'm just pointing the facts out for the record. Let the people know.
I will also say, to like really hammer home a theme here, that I went home and watched the UK version because I was so frustrated with I enjoyed it. The way that it ended. And I honestly couldn't tell you why now, like this far removed from it. I'm like, yeah, the way it ended made sense because everybody on that show was so stupid and the person who won was smart. Something about it in the moment, like, I don't know, my sense of justice in some way was like insulted. So I came home and I was like, well, I want to watch like another season and see how it worked. And that one was really interesting to watch in comparison. So it was another thing where I felt challenged by a piece of media to do more media. But I'm also watching season two now. So I think I just have to also admit that I enjoy this silly little murder mystery show.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'll take the crown as the reality TV show watcher. You mentioned that we had like watched Severance as part of like a thing that we were going to do content around. So I have to mention that we also watched Wheel of Time season one and season two, which is not necessarily something we're going to do content around. However, we started like what is to this day of all of the things that we've ever done and started, one of my favorite things that we've ever done.
Same.
Prophecy Girls. It is just such a good concept, and I love it so much. It is also very time intensive and work intensive. And we have like 75% of the next episode done. It's so stupid. Me saying it out loud, yep. I'm like, we are so stupid.
Yep. I heard it. But I also heard that.
Anyways, it was around Wheel of Time, the first Wheel of Time book. So we both read the book. Don't ask me anything about it. I don't remember anything, which is probably why we haven't finished this episode.
Hilariously, I actually do remember a ton about this book. It was a very intense
a thing.
traumatic experience, but anyway.
I would reread it, honestly, to do
to do the content. Hilarious.
To really commit to the bit.
Yeah, sure.
But we did watch Wheel of Time season one, season two. Even though we read the book, we're in a fan. Rosamund Pike.
Rosamund Pike is our queen. And so...
is our queen. We started the episode, you know, talking a little bit about how I did not enjoy season two as much. But any thoughts, any remaining thoughts on Wheel of Time?
It's a perfectly fine show that I will keep watching. Like, I will watch this show for as long as it is on. And also, I will not think about it when it is not on. Like, I don't know. I won't look forward to it. If it's airing, I will watch it. And that's it. That's the extent of it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all and 10 being very, very likely, how likely would you be to read a book 2?
Oh, I would only do it as project reading, first and foremost. I would not be like, wow, I'm so curious. Like, in the way that, you know, earlier, my curiosity led me back into those, like, the Gilded Wolves. I was like, let me do this. Let me run this back. I want to know. This is the kind of book where I am totally fine to look at some wikis. See if I have any lingering curiosity that I might feel about what happened to that character. I'll look at a little wiki and you'll tell me how they died. And I'll say, great. All right. That's it. Because that is the experience of reading that book. Like, it felt so rote. Yes. Just like, here is a bunch of information being spewed at you for no real purpose. Like, I don't feel like there is anything substantive to be gained from the reading experience of the book, a wiki list of the biography of this character. I don't know. I feel like that gives me everything I would need.
And a much more pleasurable and short experience.
Correct. Much better by virtue of not taking, you know, 30 hours of my life if I were listening at one time speed, which, okay, obviously I was never listening at one time speed.
I'm like at a 2. I'm a never say never girly, but even I am, yeah, like, yeah. I feel no challenge. No, I'm good. Thanks.
Okay. Here's the thing, too, though. I mentioned that Wheel of Time as a show, I'll keep watching it for as long as it's on. I won't think about it basically at all when it's not on. I now want to circle around in defense of The Gilded Age. Also a show in which, you know, like, there aren't thoughts to experience while you watch this show. Like, the thing about season one of this show is that the most dramatic thing that happens, like, the highest tension moment in season one is when Christine Baranski crosses the street. But, oh my, yes, God, the drama of Christine Baranski crossing the street. Crossing it was a very big street. Deal when it happened. And I just, I love the fact that this show has no thoughts like that. I don't know. I just,
yeah.
I do think about this show even while it's not airing, like, sure, to think fondly about the experience of not having thoughts other than looking at how pretty the costumes are, yes, and waiting to hear what bitchy thing Christine Baranski is going to say about her neighbors. I love that. It's great.
I will say that was kind of like an intentionally spicy take. And I did say that out of love. I had a very enjoyable time letting the show watch me. I think it knows what it is. And I think like that is what makes it pretty enjoyable too. It's like not trying to do too much more than what it is. Yeah. I will say that, like, the thing that it is least served by is that I think that its main character-ish, it's an ensemble cast, but that main female character, she is the weakest.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yes.
Like, you know, she's not giving much.
She's a cardboard cutout of a person.
She is a cardboard cutout of a person, and she's surrounded by these phenomenal, yes, actresses.
Yes.
Like, doing the most with the very little that they are given. So, like, that's a thing that stands out to me in a way that is like, I don't think that is meant to be that way. I think that, yeah, is just a weakness of the show. But otherwise, like, I don't know, everything else that it's doing, I think it's doing very purposefully, and I had a good time watching it.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just saying, I'm really excited for more Gilded Age, more thought-free.
That's fair. However,
I also watched Buccaneers on Apple TV. It's like Gilded Age, but more like Gossip Girl levels of general drama. And I enjoyed it, but nowhere near as much. I was like, wait, no, this isn't, you've misunderstood me and what I was looking for, what I wanted out of this little period drama TV show. So
you did too much. It did too much.
If you watched Gilded Age and thought to yourself, I didn't have enough, it didn't experience enough conscious thought, then Buccaneers might be for you. It wasn't for me, but maybe that's what you want.
Gilded Age gave you the exact right amount of conscious thought.
Yeah, correct. I should say I did actually enjoy Buccaneers, but I felt that I experienced a few too many conscious thoughts while watching Buccaneers. I also, in thinking about my 2023 in TV, have to acknowledge that I did a whole rewatch of The Nanny.
No, did you?
I don't think I did talk about it at all. I think it was just a pleasant experience that I was having, that I would just go and sit on my couch and watch The Nanny and let it wash over me. My hot take is that it's the actual best slow burn romance on TV. It's The Nanny. People who are like, oh, it took a whole season. You don't know. You don't know. Okay, the struggle of waiting for the final resolution to will they or won't they. That is The Nanny. I really love that show. It's a great show. It holds up. I mean, it's got a couple jokes that are a little, you know, don't land, not great. But for the most part, that show holds up really well.
During the course of this conversation, I was reminded that I did, in fact, watch One Thing Without You last year.
Wow.
Thank you. However, surprising probably no one, yet again, it was a police procedural. I am so sorry. No. I am who I am. I apologize deeply to everyone, but this is who I am. It is an ITV show called Karen Pyrie, I think is how you pronounce it, and it's an adaptation of a series of mystery novels, but the first season is only 3 hour or 2 hour long episodes, so it wasn't a big time commitment. Mm-hmm. And the titular character is a young, like, super normal detective, like, just like a person, really feels like a person you could know. And she gets assigned to a cold case that is gaining attention because of a podcast. Mm. And so they shoot this over to her. And it's just like a really solid detective story. And I enjoyed it. I like super enjoyed the like normalness of it all, and the fact that the main character felt really accessible. Like so many times, like detectives feel like really tortured or dark. Mm. And Karen just felt like a normal woman, like super normal problems. And like the mystery itself was also interesting. Like towards the end when we were realizing what was happening, and like the very end, and like the emotional confrontation of like coming face to face with like whodunit was really, really good. So I don't know if you're also in the in the market for some copaganda. Might I interest you in this ITV adaptation? I don't know.
Incredible.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you all for listening. Honestly, if you're listening to this, like, thank you so much.
The real MVP.
The real MVPs. I imagine you might have just come off our 2022 year in review, which is, you know, even more impressive that you listened to that one. So thank you so much. We would love to hear all of your thoughts about this episode or about your 2023 in media. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com, or you can find us on Twitter at snark_squad. I am at My Name Is Marines.
I am at Sweeney Says.
This show is a Snark Squad production, and the music is by Stefan Chin.